Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When it comes to Donnie in particular, I think he's an excellent coach, but we should have never had any sort of arrogance coming out of our locker room. We haven't done anything. We haven't. We haven't made the playoffs. We haven't put ourselves in a position. We haven't earned the respect in the league yet. So the reality is, too, that 31 teams are disappointed at the end of the year, right? There's one team that feels really good. But there's 16 teams that are even feel worse than the other 15 teams. We haven't earned it. We got to earn it. And, like, this league doesn't give you anything. The game doesn't give you anything. You have to respect the game. You have to respect the league. And that's what I'm talking about, the mindset of walking in the morning and it's time to go to work.
Kevin Adams, man, I loved his tone yesterday. I know talk is cheap. Got a lot of responses. Talk is cheap. I love we haven't earned the respect of the league yet. Amen.
Yeah.
Like, it's a harsh thing to say, but we say it sometimes. And, you know, a lot of us love the Buffalo Sabres, but we want them to feel like a real team. And sometimes they don't feel like a real team.
Yep.
Yesterday, I thought the GM sounded like the GM of a real team. He's got to follow up and follow through on his promises and hire a coach with NHL experience is going to take them to the next level. But part of this context, Joe, for me, good morning, Jeremy and Joe, happy Wednesday. It's kind of nice outside. It's going to rain a little later today. Part of this context for me is when they got eliminated, I posted a poll. What is it? Worse than it looks or not as bad as it looks? And I've said multiple times, this is not anything close to rock bottom. We're annoyed. They're in purgatory. But there have been years where it's like, man, it's going to take such a lot of work to get them to a good spot. They've got to cut this out and move this on. And who would take a job? And who would? And now I feel like the right coaching hire in, what, two players?
Mm-hmm.
Would anybody be shocked if they ended the drought next year? Would anyone be shocked? Why should you be shocked? There's enough talent. Look at Washington. They're not even good.
No, they're bad.
They're really bad. The Red Wings were in it until the very last day. They're not good. The Islanders, are they good? Well, they're good now. You know, you don't even have to be that good. It's part of the point about the NHL. But I loved hearing Adam say, we haven't earned the respect of the NHL yet. That's right.
When's the last time you had someone in the Sabres organization talk like that?
Right.
Or, like, because that you might believe that they think that way, but you wouldn't know, right? The way Botterill talked, the way that Kruger talked, even the way Granato and Adams have talked over the years. It's this, we're all smiling and happy. Like, guys, it's not as bad as you think. We're okay. It's like this being content with where they're at to some degree of, oh, we're gonna keep doing it. We're gonna keep getting better and better. Like, again, it's only words, but it's proof that they actually think that way. That there's someone in the building that is thinking that way.
Right. It sounds like Kevin Adams, even though he's right now, you know, the voice of the team and the man out in front, it sounds like behind closed doors, he would say to them, like, you guys haven't done squat. One of my little, whatever you want to call it, a pet peeve or something that bothered me about the Sabres this year. You pointed out, we all pointed out many times, their longest win streak was 3.
Yep.
And their longest losing streak was 4. It was always win, loss, mm-hmm. win, loss, win, mm-hmm. loss. They would have horrible games and then win the next one and talk like they've got it figured out. They mm-hmm. lost 9-4 to Columbus and the chance of fire Donnie. I've got, at different points of the season, Kyle Okposo saying, like, oh, the fans booing, that's not on us. That's not on us. That's about years and years and years. It's like, no, that's you. They're booing you. They're booing your performance on the ice at home. There are a lot of disappointing, dead effort nights. They got scored on in the first 5 minutes over and over and over again. They were asleep all the time. And then they would win the next game because a Toronto goalie lets in, like, 5 goals above expected. And the mood of the team was, yeah, we figured it out. We know what's going on. We've got it.
Yep.
Constantly that tone of, oh, yeah, we got it. There's never been more belief than there is right now. I mean, Dylan Cousins said that, which, fine, I'm glad he's got belief. But Adams referenced Cousins specifically. It sounds like Cousins is a bit of a, I mean, a reclamation project is saying it much too strongly, but he specifically talked about Cousins.
Yeah.
How he kind of lost his way this year.
He said, there were nights where I thought he's not playing to his identity. What I tell him is the other center you're playing against has to think that was miserable going against 24 all night.
So they lost Cousins.
They lost Cousins.
They got to get him back.
Yeah. Is that job one of the next coach? Job one, or maybe the jobs, of Don Granato when he showed up was, one, you need to save Rasmus Dahlin from whatever he's headed down. Because it was in bad shape when he took over.
He did.
Yep. And it's, can you make Tage Thompson even into an NHL player? Tage Thompson wasn't even an NHL player when Don Granato took over. Can you do those couple of things? Like, Skinner, can you salvage anything here? Like, can you take these individuals and can you kind of spin them the other way? The guy for that, for the next coach, is got to be Cousins. Whoever is in, if Lindy's in a meeting with them, Berube, whoever, it's part of the meeting, I bet, is just dedicated to, this guy did not work this year. Like,
right.
What is your plan to figure that out for us? Because that's going to be one of the most important things.
Right. Where can you get us the guy that on, was it New Year's Day 2 years ago, stripped Bergeron of the puck and went down and scored in Boston?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
That guy who we watched and we signed to a big, long contract. And listen, there's a lot to like about Dylan Cousins' game, but I asked Don about it in our last conversation because he looked like a guy that was a little bit lost in terms of his identity. And there's Kevin Adams to basically say it. So, yeah, I think he's at the top of the list. And the new coach comes in with some good young players, lots of prospects. Boy, I'll tell you, if you want to...
Youth. Even though...
And a goalie that... Two goalies that maybe look like they could be up to the task.
Yeah. That's the one thing I'm struggling with, that I'm conflicted with. Because I liked hearing Adams yesterday defiantly be like, that's it. No more talk about them being young. Which I appreciate.
Because he said they're experienced. He's like, Zach Benson's young, but now he's experienced.
Even by that part, though, like they're the youngest team in the league. You don't want to know where they rank in experience? Like, games played? They're still, like, 26th. It's not like they're that much higher. So, but I know what he means. Like, they are more experienced than they are youthful. Two things are going to be tough here. No more talk of youth. They're still the youngest team in hockey. And
that could change. They could go out and trade some young guys and get some veterans.
It could. Do we expect it to? Like, how much do we expect that to change, though?
That's
like, their two goalies are going to be really young next year.
That's a good conversation. When Adams, he's got his guy in mind, right? Craig Berube, Lindy Ruff, whoever it is. First meeting is going to be, what do you think? If that coach says, I'll tell you who I don't want around here, that guy. Does Kevin Adams say, like, okay, you can do it. I'll make a Bills comparison here, right? Like, when the Bills change coordinator, they start to build for what Joe Brady wants. Like, okay, you've worked with this receiver. You like this guy. Bring in your own guy.
Isn't when McDermott got here? I mean, this was with multiple players.
Yes. Like, Sammy Watkins, Ronald Darby,
Marcel Darius,
yes,
who was
yes.
on the team like into the year. There, eventually, was like, I don't. This guy can't be on the team anymore.
Yeah, it's not always thought of the same way for hockey, and this isn't exactly a rebuild,
right?
But yeah, the next coach, if Adams already has it in mind, listen.
Well, all I mean is the next coach is going to have to be good with coaching young players on some level. I'm not saying he has to be the developmental guy like Granato was, but on some level, there's going to have to be an ability to coach young players because they're probably going to be the youngest team in hockey again next year. Like, it's going to be a simple fact of their roster build unless there is dramatic overhaul on that team, and I'm not expecting dramatic overhaul.
No, I wouldn't either. They're not
Lindy.
They're not in bad shape, the overhaul.
Lindy did just do this last year. The Devils were the second youngest team in the league. And Berube, when he first got to St. Louis, I think this was more true of them when like the Kyrus and the Robert Thomases of the world were there. So you can have the guy Adams is talking about, pedigree and experience coaching in the league, and also have someone that you think can get through to young players. I don't think it has to be, oh, you need a development guy because they're young. Like, I think you can have the type of coach he's talking about work with the group that they currently have.
803-0550. Get some calls in, connecting with our fans. Tony is up next. Hey, Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Thanks, Tony.
Here we are again, right? Here we are again. Same spot. Listen, you know what?
we need to do is let's take a poll, a Buffalo Sabres fan poll. What kind of team do we want to see here? You know, I've been watching the game since I've been 9 years old. I go back to when Bob Sauve shut out the Montreal Canadiens in the first round of the playoffs when it was a five-game series back-to-back in the Forum against a Montreal, you know, aging dynasty back then. And all through the years, my favorite team was the 1997 Buffalo Sabres. They were an extremely physical team. They kind of lacked talent, but they made up for it with the way they worked and how hard they played. And I got to tell you, if you could gut the bottom nine forwards and keep, you know, and just bring in guys that are grinding, guys that don't mind going into the corners and doing the dirty work and hitting bodies. I mean, I know the game has changed, but it hasn't changed that much. You look at the Stanley Cup winners, there is an essence of grit to them where they don't mind going into the corners, where their goaltending is good. Okay? It's not average. I mean, you've been watching this for so damn long, and you see that it's like how you could not fix this in 13 years is beyond me, but here we are.
Yep.
Take a poll. What do the fans want to see? What's going to make a show for the audience?
Can I tell you the other team I'd ask in the poll? The 0506 Sabres. I'd ask, would you rather be the 97 or the 0506? What do you think people would pick?
The 97. I'd rather be the 97 Sabres with a little more scoring power, personally, because it represents our city. We're a hard-nosed city. We work hard. We grind for everything we get here. Okay?
Yep.
And we want our teams to represent who we are.
I just want them to win, Larry. Thank you. I just want them to win.
It's so funny. I just a second ago had this with Brian Mazurowski down the hall at BEN. He's like, you know who every Sabres fan's favorite team is? And I'm like, the 06 Sabres? He's like, oh, no, wait. No, the 97 Sabres. Like, we just got tripped up in the same thing. And I just, that's longer ago, and I'm two when that team is going, so I'll talk on my butt a little bit here, not watching that season, but wasn't that team only good because Dominik Hasek was the best goalie in the world? They don't have Dominik Hasek.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a very unique circumstance, I think, from that team. I'm not saying what they did was completely fake. Back then, I think that worked. I think if you are wanting to build them in the name of a team that used to be great in this city, I am 100 times out of 100 thinking of the 06 Sabres before I get to another team.
Even 06-07. Like, I would take that.
And that is
too.
That's how their roster is already constructed, right? Like, thanks, Tony, for the call. Like, taking nine forwards and committing it to that. Like,
that's a good way to lose.
Also, you already have 12 of your forward spots kind of committed. So, like, I don't know how you're getting a whole different type of identity as a team. Like, you're going to need the coach to mold these guys into what he wants. And they've got some big guys, right? Like, the top of the lineup, look at the guys they've paid. Like, they've got big players, but are they physical? Are they, going to play like Nolan would have coached them to? Like, I'm not expecting that from anybody that comes in here.
There's definitely a happy medium. And Kevin Adams talked about being more abrasive in the bottom six, which, of course,
that was the word he used, right?
Yeah,
abrasive.
They could be more abrasive in the bottom six. And no one's going to push back on that if they're good.
What does abrasive mean, though? Does that mean more?
It's more about the Dylan Cousins point about how that guy's got to be miserable at the end of the night.
Okay, all right.
Adams was very frank on, tough to play against. Sometimes you're tough to play against because you score a million goals. Sometimes it's because you're relentless on the forecheck or you're right in the guy's back pocket on every single play. Like, okay. The thing I would say to Tony's call is just like, do that, but never sacrifice skill for it. Why am I saying I don't want a team that's skilled?
Right.
These teams that win the Stanley Cup, what are they? They're a lot of things. They're good. They're deeper. They're better than the Sabres. They've got better players. They've got in this year, okay, you want to really do what it was this year? This year, other teams' best players were a lot better than the Sabres' best players.
Yes.
Nikita Kucherov had more points,
more assists
than any Sabre had points.
Yeah.
Connor McDavid has more assists than any Sabre has points by 40%.
Austin Matthews had more goals than the Sabre had points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If the Sabres had the top line, just the top line, do what it did last year, this team makes the playoffs. Go ahead and add 20.
What? And you're saying just offensively?
Just offensively.
Yeah.
They were a plus two on goal differential, which is the best they've been since 2011. Just go ahead and add 18 goals to Tage. I mean, he was hurt. Okay.
Yeah.
Tuck was battling things.
Skinner, Cousins.
Skinner was not the same. Cousins. All this team really needed was its best players to be better. You know, it's not really a rocket science formula about abrasiveness and jam and grit. Yeah, sure, go out and get all those things. But this team fell because the top lines didn't produce. Paterka did. Quinn got hurt. If you were to list their top six scoring players at forward, the only one that did not have a disappointing season, is it Paterka? Is that it?
Yep.
Greenway was not a disappointment. He's pretty good for what he's supposed
to. Well, I mean, he scored 10 goals.
Right, for what he's supposed to do.
Is, though,
he's
yeah,
supposed to
yeah.
be a depth guy. I'm not supposed to ask him to score 20.
Right.
I'm supposed to ask him to do pretty much what he did. And I need more from Tage and more from Tuck and more from Skinner. And I need Quinn to be healthy.
Well, he's one of those guys in the bottom six. That isn't that what we even think they're going to add? Aren't they going to add another Greenway in their bottom six?
Probably.
I don't think they're sacrificing skill for it. As Adams answering Paul's question yesterday about, like, do you want to be tougher to play against? Like, he said, he kind of hesitated. He's like, yes. But, like, the first thing he said about it was that speed and being fast is, like, and skilled, like, that, I don't know if he said the word skilled, but he definitely said fast, is a way to be tough to play against, right? Like, he would know. He played against the 06 Sabres. That team should have won the Stanley Cup. And I don't know if Adams thinks about it that way.
Maybe.
He has the ring. But he knows how tough that 06 Sabres team was to play against. Was anybody on that 06 Sabres team, like, bullying the Hurricanes around in that playoff series? Was Mike Greer doing it, maybe? Like, there was maybe a guy here and there. Why were they tough to play against? Because good luck staying with Danny Briere in open space. Like, the dude was just going to put you in a blender.
Well, they were just so deep and so good. It's why Ken Hitchcock lost his mind in a postgame presser.
Right.
Because the Flyers tried to fight. The Sabres kept going to the power play and scoring goals.
Right.
It's like, thanks.
Like, listen, I want a little bit of what Florida has. I definitely want that. I want...
Listen.
They are just going to run you through the wall. But they're going to beat you 5-1 while they do it.
It's a point to be made on the division. Do you know the top three teams in the NHL in hits?
Florida's probably one of them, aren't they?
Yes.
Top three in hits?
Yeah.
Which, are you asking me because the Sabres are in the top
three?
Okay,
no.
Okay.
I'm asking you because, again, like, it's marrying the skill and the tough to play against and the jam and the kind of style you want. I saw yesterday. It's Toronto, Boston, and Florida.
The top three in the Atlantic.
Yeah. And those are not teams that just hit because they never have the puck.
Right.
They hit because they play like that. They hit because they make it miserable. And
right.
they all win. They're all great teams. And Toronto and Boston are going to play in the first round, and that's a tough break for one of those teams.
Isn't that more, though, like, to Tony's call and to that point about, like, how those teams play, isn't that more about once you get to the playoffs? Like, I don't feel like I'm there yet. I feel like right now, when you're just trying to get in, I don't need all that yet. That is how I win when I get to the postseason. What I need now is... Like, right, their best players to score. I need to make sure, talent-wise, I'm not lacking. I need to make sure on that front I'm good first. And then, and only then after, if I've made the playoffs at that point, and it's clear that, oh man, they're just getting bullied. And they're losing too, but they're getting, they cannot get through these guys. They can't get through a Florida playing that style. Like, I feel like the sandpaper, the tougher to play against in terms of the physical respect. Like, all of that for me sounds like something that I should be worrying about once I actually get to the postseason.
Is there any conspiracy part of this? There's something Adam said about the job and how attractive it is. And this will be, you know, this will be a little bit ironic as I make this point, but if you'll allow it. One of the reasons he said this is an attractive job is because of the market. And people love hockey. And if you love coming to the rink and loving being part of a place where they care about hockey, you know, some guys don't want that.
Yeah.
Some guys don't want to be nonstop. The pressure that comes in with any coach with this market is going to be intense. People care here. Is there any point to be made? I might not even believe this myself. Is he talking about Brind'Amour in Carolina? Like, what are you in Carolina? Are you the mayor because the Canes are good? You know, you're the head coach of the Sabres and they're good here. You are a figure. It is not the same. It's not the same to win here versus other places. And I don't know. I wonder if there's any sort of connection to be made there. It's a leap. In Carolina, they score all the time and have a lot of fun and win all the time. And we would like to have that as well. But should I root against Carolina so their owner freaks out and says, you know what, why would I pay this guy so much money? He can't get us past the second round. I feel like I might want to root for that.
Their owner's like, isn't he one of those, like, or no, I'm thinking of the Panthers owner.
Tom Dundon is his name, never mind. Right? Isn't that his name?
Yeah, I'm confusing him with the Panthers owner.
David Tepper.
Carolina. David Tepper. The Hurricanes, by the way, like, I'm not saying Brind'Amour is not the style of coach that some people are looking for. Accountability and that type of stuff is there. But if you want to look at, like, hit stats on the year, I think they're in the bottom three of the league this year.
Well, it's a different way they're tough to play against.
Right.
They win all the time. 803-0550, Paul Hamilton. We'll get his thoughts.
Dead last, by the way, sorry.
Oh, dead last in
hits.
Dead
last in hits.
But number one in your hearts. 803-0550. Jeremy and Joe, you want to give us a call? We'd love to have you. Paul Hamilton's going to join us next. We'll get his thoughts on Kevin Adams from yesterday and also the coaching candidates. If there's any names we're missing, who would be the right fit, all that. Join us here on WGR.
I got info on the Detroit game right after they scored their empty netter. I think it happened pretty close together. But I was pulling them. I'm pulling them. And that was the right time to pull them. Didn't know anything was going on with Detroit at that time. But immediately after that, our video guys told us that Detroit just went to overtime.
John Tortorella on last night's wild kind of finish in Washington. It's like the Flyers got eliminated twice. They gave up the empty netter in a tie game, which would have ended it, basically.
And they're the jerks they ruined for the playoff race.
And then they're told it was over anyway because Detroit got a point.
Right.
Paul Hamilton joins us. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Were you watching that craziness last night?
No, I wasn't.
Yeah. It was interesting.
I actually, yesterday I think I had 2 hours sleep when I had talked to you and then everything broke loose and I think by the time that all went on, I was asleep in my chair.
Yeah. Well, the playoffs await, and the Sabres will miss, the Red Wings will miss, the Flyers will miss, and we got a good dose of Kevin Adams yesterday. Paul, what was your takeaway from Kevin Adams' press conference? For me, it was a lot about his tone. I thought he had, you don't get trophies for this. There's no banner to hang. There's no playoff spot because of it. But I appreciated the way the GM sounded, it to me was a different tone than he's really taken all that often.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was genuinely angry, and I think that fans needed to see that because they're angry, and so is he. And I think he was honest with the fans in what he was saying, and I don't think he was trying to set a tone, but I think he showed the fans that hey. You know, this is unacceptable. And I had something to do with it, too, just like Don Granato did and everybody else. And, it was an emotional decision for him, I think, to fire Don Granato. It's not something that I think he wanted to do, but it was something, I think he, once the season ended, I think he had decided before the season ended, but once the season got to maybe 1 or 2 weeks towards the end, I think he realized it was something that he needed to do for the organization to take the next step. And, he was agitated throughout that press conference. He was blunt, and I thought he was honest. And, for 45 minutes.
Yeah. Did you have the same takeaway that I did, Paul, that it sounded like when Adams would be asked about what he wants in the next head coach, that he almost has a maybe like an individual in mind, even maybe more so than the type of coach? Like, it sounded like to me he's got a person in mind every time he was talking about it.
Yeah, I think he does. He basically said that he knows what he wants in the next coach. And it didn't sound like it's going to take a long time to do it. And So definitely, but you know, I think, you know, I had, you know, it seems like Michael Pekka or Seth Appert or, you know, David Carl, you know, the coach at Denver who's won two straight NCAA, or not two straight, but has won two NCAA championships plus the gold medal at the World Junior. It seems like guys like that are out of the running because they don't have NHL coaching experience.
So, Paul, the names, right? You let me know if I miss one and if you want to give a thought on them. Lindy, of course, is a name. There's the nostalgia, the relationship with the organization, and he's coached a lot of different teams. Craig Berube. I know he's been looking to get back into coaching. Bruce Boudreau, Gerard Gallant. Brind'Amour is going to be a name until he signs an extension. Am I forgetting anyone? And if I'm not, then who do you like? What's the right answer?
I think if Brind'Amour does not re-sign, I think there would be an excellent chance. I would be surprised if he wasn't the new head coach of the Sabres if he doesn't re-sign with Carolina. I mean, he's very good friends with Kevin Adams. He's won a Stanley Cup with him as players. And I think that's what he has in mind when he's, you know, thinking of a coach to move forward. But the question is, you know, is he going to re-sign with Carolina, or is a new opportunity something that he would look forward to? If he's not available, I think Craig Berube, who you know, won the Stanley Cup in St. Louis. He took over and they...
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Went from last place in January in the National Hockey League to winning the Stanley Cup. And, you know, after that, he was in the playoffs a couple of times, but it just never approached that. You know, he kind of set the bar really high in his first year there. And it was never that. And then finally, you know, he was let go. He also was coached for a couple of years with the Philadelphia Flyers, if you remember. So, but he knows what it takes to win the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. He coached a team that did win the Stanley Cup. And of all the people that you mentioned, for me, if it's not Brind'Amour, that would probably be the guy I would turn to.
On Brind'Amour, do you think, and Adams... I'm trying to think, like, exactly. I could pull up the quotes when he was asked about, like, timing, or he even offered up comments about, like, you know, how quickly he might want to do this. Do you think they would wait for Brind'Amour if he had it in his head that that's, like, the best idea? It could be, Paul, that, I mean, if Carolina goes on a run, they don't have to. I mean, they play the Islanders in round one. They'll be a favorite. And so they could be out in a couple weeks, or they could be out in, you know... We could be talking a month and a half, 2 months before Brind'Amour would become available.
He never said this, but I think he waited for Brind'Amour before he hired Don Granato. It was, you know, all indications were that Brind'Amour was going to resign for Carolina. Could have been coincidence, but Don Granato was hired within a couple of days after Brind'Amour put his name down on the dotted line. So, you know, I'm not in the room. Could have been coincidence, but I'm not sure it was. You know, I think he just wanted to make sure that Brind'Amour was signing with Carolina, and I think he would do that again if, you know, it was taking a while. I think unless Rod Brind'Amour just absolutely tells him, no, I would not come there or something like that, I think, yes, he would wait until he was signed.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Highlands. Get some calls in for Paul. Larry in South Florida. Hey, Larry, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Paul, all the years I've called, I think this is the first time I've ever had a chance to talk to you, so it's kind of an honor for me, bud.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you called.
Before I get to my point on Adams, and I'd love to get your take on this, Paul, and the guys as well, I just want to give Granato some credit, you know, for, you know, coming in and help develop Darlene, or at least to get Darlene to play like he can play, for him to score 20 goals is pretty remarkable. To do what he did with Thompson, like you said earlier, Joe, he's now an elite goal scorer. I know it's a down year, and what he's done with Cousins, again, down year. But I'm really impressed with how he had the staying power with UPL. Because we are all ready to say, see you later, after last year. But even after the beginning of the year, he had the fortitude to stay with UPL, and look what he's become. So I just want to give Granato some credit. I still think it was the right call. It should have happened sooner. So I'd love to get your take on his press conference yesterday. Yes, I did love his tone. He was aggravated. He was frustrated. He's saying all the right things. Except for one thing, and maybe, Paul, you can give some insight on this. He said right from the beginning, day one of training camp, he really wasn't, and I'm not going to, I don't want to use the same words because I don't remember his exact words, but he seemed like he wasn't happy from day one. But in the same breath said he didn't think moving on from Granato was the right move. So there's two things that concern me here. I think in order for Adams to save himself, he's got to hit a home run with this next coach, and he's also got to hit a home run with either a forward or a defenseman. Now, the defenseman that I really wanted last year was Chickering, and the fact that we didn't get that done and he ended up in Ottawa, which really bothers me because Ottawa, in my opinion, is in worse shape than we are. And Chickering at the time did not have a no-trade clause, if I remember correctly, and his numbers were great. So I think I'm nervous about Adams and the roster build, and I'm also nervous that he said that we really shouldn't have moved on from Granato, but yet he wasn't happy with day one. And I'd love to get your take, fellas.
Thanks, Larry. Yeah, Paul, I had someone point that out to me, and I like that question. The standard wasn't high enough day one of training camp. How can that happen?
Yeah, I mean, he wants a higher standard. He had talked about that, you know, and he what he did say was, the way he put it is, he wanted to give this team every opportunity, like they would get close in, before those two Detroit games. And he wanted to give this team every opportunity to prove that they could do it. And, you know, they couldn't do it. And but the one quote that I really took away, there were two actually, but this one was, we are craving accountability and structure, and I think the team is ready for that. With the next coach we get, it'll be at the top of the list for me. And you spend all year craving accountability and structure. He's not wrong at all. I agree 100% that there needs to be more structure and accountability. And but he looked at it that, you know, he was being patient. He tends to be more patient than maybe fans want to see in what he does, and he wanted to be patient, and he wanted to give them every opportunity to perform and be able to do it. And when they didn't do it, that's when he, you know, I think changed his mind. I don't think he was planning on firing Granato until it got down near the end of the season, and I think he changed his mind and decided, you know what, I have to do this. I have to do this to get to the next step, and he did.
Paul, how did you take in Kevin Adams' answer to your question about being tougher to play against? His comment about more abrasiveness in the bottom six, like I think that comment is going to stick in my mind leading up to whenever free agency, whenever they'll start making trades. He talked about not, you know, wanting to sacrifice speed and skill, but him talking about the bottom six that way makes me think he's going to be looking for a certain type of player for one of those depth forward spots.
Yeah, well, he was talking about there's a couple of different ways to be hard to play against, and he's right. You can be hard to play against if you have speed and skill and teams can't keep up with you, and that makes you hard to play against. But he also talked about what I was meaning, that, you know, you want to, other teams to be miserable playing you. You want them to come into your arena and not want to be there. And say, oh, we got to play that team again. That they're relentless, you know, type of a thing. And that's not what happens. And he said, he goes, we have to be a team that, you know, is good in our home rink, that wins. He goes, you can't go anywhere or be in the playoffs if you can't win at home. And, you know, he wants other teams to come into their rink and dread having to play that team. And, you know, you got the skill part of it. And how long have we been talking about this? I mean, I've been saying for how long that this team is not constructed correctly. You know, they need more guys that are harder to play against and that other teams don't want to play against. And, you know, he has to be more than one guy. I mean, they got to get two or three of those guys.
And he also, Paul, like, said that almost pretty specifically about Dylan Cousins, right? Like, he said other things about Cousins, but one comment he made was that he wants the other center to think that it was miserable going against 24 all night. Like, I think in terms of the guys that are already here and in the top six, like, Adam sounded to me like he really wants Cousins to grow into a player like that.
Well, that's when I had asked him about, when you sit down and think about your players this summer, how do you know what you have? Like, in Thompson, do you have a 47-goal score or do you have a 29-goal score? In Tuck, do you have a 36-goal score or 22? In Cousins, do you have a 31-goal score or 18? And Cousins was an example he used. And he said if Cousins, like, gets himself up to 25 goals and is a good two-way player who's, you know, and he talks about being a miserable guy to play against. He goes, you don't necessarily have to get 31 goals out of him. You know, if that's the type of player he turns into, and you know, that makes him difficult to play against, and teams won't look forward to playing against him. So, so those are the examples he was using with Dylan Cousins of, you know, just being the guy. He goes, in each individual, he goes, it's a good question, but he goes, with each individual, you have to sit down and want, okay, why did this happen? Why did they not have as many goals? What were the contributing factors to it? You know, when you're trying to think, what do you got? You know, what kind of player do you have there? You know, and Tage Thompson, well, he broke his hand. And when he came back, he wasn't 100%. Well, you know, once he got going near the end of the year, I think I had written he was on a 43-goal pace, I think, in the last 16, 17 games before getting injured again in the last game, which is more like what he was when he scored 47. You know, he was pretty much on that pace. So, you know, you saw – now, you know, I always thought he could be a 50-goal scorer. Maybe that was too much. Maybe he's a guy that would settle in between 40 and 45 most years, which is fine. I mean, if you have a 40, 45-goal scorer, you're good with Tage Thompson, I would think.
Paul, players speak today. Which player are you most interested to hear what they have to say?
Well, Darlene was the most upset, you know, when you know, they talked about when the fans were, you know, chanting that they wanted Don Granato fired. But I think players they will understand and they will realize that nobody to blame but themselves when it comes to you know, their coach being fired. They didn't produce for him. They didn't play for him. When, you know, the things that he asked them to do, I don't know if they were capable of doing, but they just couldn't. For 2 years, the system he wanted to play, they, for the most part, couldn't play it. And, you know, when that happens and, you know, you can't do that, there's going to be changes. And so really, I think the players have to look at it that if they're upset, and I think they will be, that Don Granato got fired, I think they have nobody to blame but themselves.
We will be listening for your reports later. Thanks, Paul.
Take care.
Paul Hamilton's appearance brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. More of your calls when we get back. Also, when we get back, I have to do a little reading in the break. Joe, the article says, inside Bill Belichick's failed job hunt.
I've already skimmed through a
little
of it.
There's some juicy stuff in here.
There is, for sure, some good stuff.
Very, very interesting. Don Fanata writing for ESPN, it appears. So we'll check in on that.
Seth Wickersham and Jeremy Fowler. Like, three reporters are all going in on, like, why Belichick didn't get hired.
All right. We'll visit that. More of your calls as well, 803-0550. Sabres coach search underway with Kevin Adams speaking yesterday. Players speak today, cleaning out lockers today and tomorrow. We'll hear from the players. So stay tuned for Paul's reports throughout the morning here and afternoon on WGR.
Tippett races over to get to it. Now races up the ice. Tippett off to the right side. Got the shot off of the save man. Empty net for the Flyers. Extra attacker out. And Oshie with a chance to put it away will do just that. The other game has gone to overtime. Won't matter for the Flyers, but for the Capitals, that's a huge goal as they take a 2-1 lead, and they are 3 minutes away from a playoff berth.
I was watching that Flyers broadcast. They effectively were in a playoff race, and then immediately it's over, signing off. Well, it's been a good season. See you later.
Mm-hmm.
Flyers lose. The Flyers did not know they had actually already been eliminated, which was another part of it there, because Detroit had scored a goal to go to overtime. That eliminated the Flyers. They could not make it. Kevin in Rochester called in on this because the Flyers pulling the goalie when they didn't know. And before the break, we'll get Kevin in and then tell you about Belichick. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I just wanted to kind of completely disagree with you guys. And I think the Flyers have no responsibility to not pull the goalie there. I think, first of all, like, as a coach, like, the entirety of spending an ounce of your preparation on establishing, like, a system to let you know when you're, like, fully eliminated just doesn't make sense at all. And then, like, especially with, like, 3 minutes left, like, you don't know when, like, you hear about the goal, whether there's going to be a challenge or whether, like, literally, like, the person who checks the scores, like, app isn't working correctly and incorrectly does things. So, like, you kind of still should be pulling the goalie there to maximize, like, your, even if it's, like, super, super small chance of, like, something weird like that happening. To me, it definitely seems like this.
Thanks, Kevin. I think it's a fair point to say it had just happened a minute before, and hey, maybe it'll get challenged. Maybe
that's
it'll
a
get,
good thought because of all
is,
the nonsense.
That is fair. Yeah. If it's 6-0 Detroit in the third period, what do? You still do it? Like Detroit, that's one thing Detroit needed to do. Detroit needed to win earlier, get their point earlier to convince Philadelphia you don't have to pull your goalie.
Is there a point to be made? I mean, that's the point he's kind of making, which is why does Philadelphia at the start of the game have to have any system to know what the score of the other game is?
Well, that's,
because nothing that happens in the other game like would change if they walked into the game thinking like, okay, this is the only outcome that we make it is something happens in that other game and we win in regulation. So because we've only got one path, I'm not even worried about what's happening.
Just win in regulation.
I'm just going to go into it, win in regulation. Don't even tell me what happens in the other game.
This is a point that, hey, we told the arena operators to not put the score of the game that affects us. Don't put it up. Right? The Bills this year or last year did not put the score of an out-of-town game on.
Right.
Like, people have phones, but I don't need the players to see it. Teams do that a lot. Bill Belichick, inside his failed coaching search. Seth Wickersham, Jeremy Fowler, Don Van Natta Jr., among other things, reporting that Belichick did not finish in the top three of any of the Atlanta Falcons' decision makers when choosing head coach.
Yep.
He wasn't even close to the job. He thought it was his, wasn't even close. And then a little bit more in here basically is that he probably won't coach again. If he does, it'll be for Jerry Jones, which I think will happen next year. Why not?
Do you think they'll fire McCarthy?
Yeah.
And they'll bring in Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I bet that.
He was blindsided by the news that like he really thought he was getting the Atlanta job. And there's also stuff in here about him and like it's the worst kept secret in the league that him and there's bad blood between him and Robert Kraft. And there's a part in here about the Commanders reaching out to Belichick for a conversation and that Magic Johnson, the minority owner of the Commanders, was pushing for Belichick behind the scenes. And that Josh Harris, the principal owner, talked with Robert Kraft about this and then ultimately decided that they weren't going to do it. Like, that sounds to me like Kraft is not doing him any favors behind the scenes. If anything, Kraft might have blackballed him, even if not on purpose. I mean, if your all-time coach, if your new owner is reaching out to you about your all-time coach, and after that conversation, he ends up at, yeah, we're not doing it. Kraft is maybe preventing him from getting a job.
Spicy.
Yeah.
803-0550. When we get back, more of your calls on the Sabres. It's been a Sabres-heavy show today. We'll get some football in mixed in as well. Pete Blackburn, he'll join us at 8:30 on some of the coaching ideas, coaching candidates for the Sabres who are now looking for a head coach. No Joe Marino this week, so we've got an open segment coming up if you want to join us. Jeremy and Cho on WGR.